Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Andrew David James, only on LA Talk Radio.
And only on one of the cloudiest days we've had so far in the month of June.
That's right, a little bit of June gloom, no doubt about it.
I know, it came a little bit early. Nice view anyway, though, right?
It is, absolutely. We can't get any better here than in the LA Talk Radio studio.
Well, it'll probably clear up by about noon?
That's right.
No, we can't. Like 2 o'clock.
2 o'clock, you think?
2 o'clock.
I don't know. I like the cloud cover for a little bit. I don't need that heat to return just yet.
Man, well, wait. You live in Malibu. So is it sunny there too?
20 degrees cooler there. It was freezing when I woke up this
degrees.
Morning. 20
degrees.
I was so cold when I left the house this morning. But, yeah, by the time I got through the canyon, it was looking nice. So, yeah. It's interesting. It's I've always got to dress in layers whenever I leave the house to make sure that I'm not desperately hot at the end of the day when I come through to work. And obviously, Michael, here it is June 8th, and we are talking street lamps and kids from Jersey and some of the most memorable and enthralling music ever created.
That's right, Andrew, and that can only mean one thing.
Mm-hmm.
Jersey Boys.
Now you said it. There it is.
Yeah.
That's right. And ladies and gentlemen, it is the show that State of the Arts has a special connection to, obviously, here. And one of the things that we're particularly excited about is that it's on stage at one of our favorite theaters, the beautiful Amundsen Theater, downtown LA at the Dorothy Chandler Pavilion.
Absolutely.
Gorgeous. Yeah.
Please
yeah.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, our two guests in the studio, Aaron DeJesus and Corey Giacomo.
Hey. Thank you.
Did I say that correctly?
You nailed it. Perfectly.
You nailed it.
Okay, good.
I'm looking under here to see if their feet are tapping yet. I don't know how you do this musical and just don't keep tapping all day long.
Really?
It's always.
And that choreography on this show is astounding.
Yep.
Have you ever? Well, we'll get into it when we talk. Maybe we should pay some bills?
Obviously, we will get back to these two fine gentlemen in just a moment here. But before we do that, we should definitely pay some bills. But I'm going to give our audience a special treat. I'm going to let them listen to a little bit more of this music as we read these sponsor reads. Because truly,
absolutely.
This is going to stick with you for the entire show. So, Michael, whenever you're ready, we'll go ahead and thank them.
Yeah, absolutely. We'd like to thank our sponsor, ladies and gentlemen, Breakdown Services, the entertainment industry standard used around the world, providing the most professional means to reach talent agents as well as actors when casting a project. To learn more about Breakdown Services, visit BreakdownExpress.com.
We'd also like to acknowledge PerformingArtsLive.com, one of the Internet's most prominent listing sources for the live arts in Southern California. We're grateful to Performing Arts Live for lending their support to State of the Arts.
We are indeed, of course, and thankful to our generous sponsors for all they do.
That is absolutely right. Now, Michael, before we dig into all of this here and talk a little more to our amazing guest, how was your week?
You know, it was... It was good. It was a good week. A little bit busy. I'm working on a new production of Oklahoma.
Am I in it?
No.
I never
do you want to be?
I never get jobs I don't audition for. It's so weird.
Is there a role for a short Italian-looking guy?
You know what? It's possible.
Oh.
Because it's being...
It's a new show.
It's a reimagined...
That's actually a huge part of this, right, Michael? They're doing multicultural casting and really putting
cool.
a new spin
it
on it.
Yeah. So, yeah. It's one of our major production theater companies here, 3D Theatricals.
Yeah.
And
oh, great,
they
yeah.
present out of the Redondo Beach Performing Arts Center and the Cerrito Center for the Performing Arts.
Wow. But, Aaron, please don't leave Jersey Boys.
No.
I need you there. Okay.
You too, Corey.
Obviously, what an amazing thing that's going to be. And I think Oklahoma is such an iconic show for anybody who hasn't seen it. You got to go see it. And to see it refreshed, if you've already seen it and love it, what a great thing to get to see in 3D theatrical.
And they're kind of digging into the text just to you know, to qualify that word reimagining.
Right.
And pulling out of it different characteristics of these characters as it would be a possible, thing to think about, the triangle between Judd and Curly and Laurie and what that really is about and so forth. So it's got a nice spin going, and that's kind of a trademark for them. They don't go to this much reimagination in previous productions, so I'm kind of excited to see this one.
Fantastic. Well,
yeah.
And now you're directing this?
No. I handle the company for their publicity.
Oh, wonderful.
Excellent.
Yeah, and for about 4 or 5 years I've been doing their seasons.
Awesome.
So that's what I do, and I also produce music and present theater occasionally. I direct it.
That's
And Andrew, you know, just for the sake of it, Andrew is in the business as a very unique kind of niche in the business, which is...
I sleep with producers to get laid. I don't know if that's
wow. Didn't know we were going
there. That's
not what
you're talking about. I work as a fight choreographer.
The fastest way to the top.
That's right. I work as a fight choreographer and actor. I got my degree in composition and literature. And so I kind of put that aside when I started making enough money to pay my bills in fight choreography. And I thought, hey, I get to go choreograph fights on the beach, and it's great. And then I turned 30, and everything stopped. And I realized, man, my knees won't be able to take this for another little bit of time. So I got back into the writing. In fact, I'm workshopping a show at the Minnesota Fringe Festival right now called The Simple Mind of Dylan McGee, which is going to premiere there. It's a really cool project. And
that's a great title.
You know, it's so funny. I've met so many great people in the middle of the country. You guys have middle of the country roots too, though, don't you? I saw in your bios that you've done a ton of shows there.
Some of us, yeah. And actually, two of the other seasons, one's from Oklahoma and one's from Denver, Colorado.
I love that. I was born in Boulder. So.
There we go.
Yeah, it was funny when I was kind of reading through that. You got cast from all over, which was really cool. So that's a great thing. I'm constantly shocked at how lucky we are to live in L.A. because we get all the great tours through here, but also at how much talent there is still in the middle of the country that's dying to get out here. It's a really cool thing to see. So.
Well, you know, and this one coming, being at the Amundsen Theater, you know, which is part of the Center Theater Group, who just celebrated their 50-year anniversary.
Yeah, an amazing 50 years it's been, too.
Just a couple weeks ago. It was an amazing evening. Yeah. So, shall we?
I think it's time to get to the meat of the show, Michael. No doubt about it. Let's do it.
Joining us here in the studio today, ladies and gentlemen, our first guest is a musical theater veteran with a professional career spanning almost 20 years. Some of his many credits include Joseph in Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat, Timon, thank you, in The Lion King, Pseudolus in A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum, Averick in Wicked, and Gus in Cats.
He has been seen as Seymour in Little Shop of Horrors, Nicely in Guys and Dolls, Tom Sawyer in Big River, Peter in Peter Pan, Patsy, Peter Han, that's Peter Pan's brother, he didn't make it quite as well. Patsy in Monty Python's Spamalot, and the Artful Dodger in Oliver. He has appeared as Joey in Jersey Boys, and now is appearing as Frankie Valli in the U.S. national tour of the same show, Jersey Boys, currently on stage now at the Center Theater Group's Amundsen Theater through June 24th.
And he is such a tremendous performer, and we are so thrilled to have him here with us today to talk about this amazing production. Ladies and gentlemen, please give a welcome to the incredibly talented Aaron DeJesus.
Thank you. That's right. Welcome.
There they are. Oh, slow on the uptake, Carl.
Thank you to our studio.
Let's blame that on the audience and not on my bad board operating skills.
Can we?
What we have playing under here is one of my favorite songs. What is it like to sing this piece?
This piece comes at a time. This is one of the two pieces in the show that actually helps tell the story. And so it's a fun acting moment for any actor to take this song and think about the words. And at this point, Frankie and his first wife, Mary, are splitting up. This song has a different
quickly
story.
Oh, what a night.
And they split up at really a pivotal point in the show. Is that correct?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It's right after they've kind of become big stars. And the lifestyle of being a star and being on the tour and being on the road all the time takes its toll on the marriage.
All right, here we go. Are you ready? Michael, this is a serious point of the show.
Oh, yeah.
Are you ready?
Bring it down. I was going to be serious.
Now, Aaron, you got to tell me, this has got to be strange to be an actor on tour trying to conduct personal relationships in your real life and watching one torn apart by Frankie Valli's, you know, touring schedule, essentially, and obviously a little bit different industry at that time. Have you dealt with that, and has that mirrored in your personal life to where you have to struggle to keep those things going at times?
Of course it has, absolutely. This is definitely an example of art imitating life, imitating art, imitating life, and back and forth. It's 2 years I've been on the road with the show. I was lucky. I've been with the show now for 5.5 years. The first 3.5, I was in the show in Las Vegas.
Sure.
And I was able to live at home and be with my wife and my daughter.
Right.
And it was fantastic. But
can I interrupt you? To that, exactly what you're saying, though, I think I saw an interview in which you said that you auditioned for this show during a period of 8 years before you got it.
That is correct, I had my first audition for Jersey Boys in the spring of 2004.
Wow.
And this is before the show was even put on and workshopped at La Jolla in San Diego. At that point, nobody knew what Jersey Boys was, what the show was going to be like. The casting director said, bring a song that's falsetto to the audition. And I'm thinking, why would I bring a song that's falsetto?
Had you sung falsetto a lot before? I mean,
a little bit, yeah. But I mean, not like professionally,
right? I mean, when would you ever?
Would. Yeah,
right,
exactly. And so when I came to the audition, I wasn't quite prepared, I guess.
Yeah.
But I auditioned for the show on and off for about 8 years before I finally got in the show.
Now, how old's your little girl?
She's 5 and a half.
And Frankie Valli had a couple little girls as well, three,
yes,
as a matter of fact.
Yes, he did, three daughters.
In fact, as I recall, he got married, had three daughters, and then got remarried and had three boys.
Yes.
He was his very own Brady Bunch, which is
exactly
really very impressive.
So. At one point, too, he married a woman who had other children.
My goodness.
And so he's got,
that's right,
he has quite a collection of children.
Well, now, as a papa, it's got to be hard to watch what he goes through with his daughter, and not to give anything away, but the heartache and the trauma that so many performers went through during that time, the 60s and the 70s, and know that, man, we have it lucky now. But that's a hard thing to watch and have happen.
It is very difficult. Thank heavens for FaceTime,
right,
and modern technology,
sure,
where, you know, I was able to talk to my wife just 2 hours ago, and she is in Norway.
Wow.
Right,
what?
Now.
She could be listening to this show.
She,
that's,
could,
right,
be, yeah. But it's right now, I think it's tomorrow in Norway. I don't know.
I can't wait to find
out
what happens.
Difference.
Oh, my goodness. I'm so excited for tomorrow. I'm calling to get some advanced information here.
Really?
That's great. What's she doing over there? Is she traveling for work or for pleasure?
She's traveling for work, but it's a pleasure to be there. She's a performer as well.
Yes,
you mentioned 3D Theatrical. Yeah. She actually has done several shows for them.
Oh,
they're a
great,
fantastic company.
What's her name?
Her name is Gail Bennett.
Oh.
She's currently a Broadway guest artist on the Disney Magic.
Yes.
Wow.
So one of the Disney cruise ships. She's doing Tangled the Musical.
Oh, fantastic.
Which is a great little show.
My little girl would run away from home to see that show.
Yeah, right?
And I don't know what that little iguana thing is.
Yeah, yeah.
I bought her a little Beanie Baby that,
right,
looked like that, and she's never put it down since. It was absurd. It's like she thinks she's Tangled.
Yeah.
So
Pascal.
That, you knew it. You knew it.
I have a daughter. What can I say?
I'll tell a real quick funny story that's got nothing to do with anything. I'm sitting on the set of a fight that I was doing the other day, and there was a backpack lane in the middle of the show. Now, we're in a strip club, so seeing a backpack in a strip club is a little bit unusual. And the cameraman, the DP, goes, can somebody move the backpack? And all of a sudden, three of us go, backpack, backpack, and went, who has children? From Dora the Explorer. That's right. All the three dads,
that's,
can't,
right,
let it.
Oh,
so
my.
I immediately knew every daddy on the, yeah. So those films and those television shows, they sure do stick with our kids,
they
don't
do.
They?
They,
yeah,
do.
And has your daughter seen you on stage?
She has. She's had several opportunities to see me in the show.
Obviously, in this show?
Recently, yeah.
Wow.
She's seen it twice. We wondered if it was, you know, there's definitely some language in the show and things
tough
like that.
Tough subject matter.
It is, and it's some tough subject matter, but she did well.
Well, I got to tell you, that music, you leave feeling so good, don't,
yeah,
you? So I can imagine that kind of covers up anything else that might be hard to watch. So.
And she's very funny. Anybody asks her, what does your daddy do? He's Frankie Valli in Jersey Boys.
She should have stopped. He's Frankie Valli.
He's Frankie Valli. My daddy's Frankie
Valli. Speaking of Frankie Valli, who was there on opening night,
yeah,
did you all have a chance to spend a little time with him other than when he came out
onto
the stage?
We did. Frankie's great. He's been supportive of the show since the beginning. I've, through the years, you know, over 5.5 years being with the show, I've met him 4 or 5 times, several times in Vegas, and,
wow,
twice on tour now. He likes to kind of keep tabs and make sure that, you know, the show is in great shape, which it always is.
He also signs off on everyone who plays the role, right?
He does. He has, he especially in the beginning, had a big role in casting, mm-hmm, and a more active role. Now, after 12 years, you know, he's not as active in his roles,
mm-hmm,
you know, in casting, things like that. But he definitely is very supportive and very fantastic. It was a neat opportunity this last time to see him and kind of share with him what an honor it's been to,
yeah,
to play him, and how grateful I am to him for, you know, putting himself out there in this way. You know, it's not easy to kind of tell your story in a way that isn't all positive, right?
Right. And trusting people enough to tell his story, that,
right,
which is so unique. And so vulnerable, and to imagine him sitting in the audience as we're telling his story about his personal life, it's wild.
It doesn't brush over the hard stuff.
No,
it doesn't say Frankie Valli was
not.
It's a serious story.
Yeah, this is not candy coated in any way.
And I've seen those musicals. I think Michael and I have both seen those musicals before a number of times, where it's like, hey, let's just ignore some of the stuff that happened. And this one digs into it, which I think is its strength.
I think
in the end, you get a full portrait of the characters, which you don't get with a lot of other places.
Absolutely,
it's important to lean into it. Yeah.
This is interesting because obviously, you know, The Who and Mamma Mia and all these great shows kind of started this idea of using music that already existed and transforming it into something else. But yeah. Frankie Valli's music was the story of his life in so many ways. So you're getting a narrative portrait without having to have songs that you've never heard before, which is really fascinating. It's all fan favorites.
When they were originally, you know, conceiving the idea, they went to the book writers, Marshall Brickman and Rick Ellis, and they were saying that, you know, we want to create a jukebox musical. Sort of like Mamma Mia.
Yeah.
We want to write a show using our music about a girl named Sherry.
Wow.
And that was the idea. And the book writers were sort of like, okay, that sounds, you know, it's been done.
Right.
And then, but while they were sitting there, Bob and Frankie were sitting there just, you know, busting each other's chops and talking. And
reminiscing on old times.
Yeah, remember when that happened? And the book writers were like, no, that's your story.
They
were
like, this is the story we want to tell.
That's so fantastic. Much more interesting. Yeah. Let's go with that. And that's then Jersey Boys was, you know, right there.
You know, it's funny because I think sometimes we don't appreciate our own lives and what the meaning can be when somebody else hears our story. And so sometimes we embellish or we try to cover, like my resume, just put all the stuff on there I'm proud of. But I mean, essentially what you do is you look at these things and you go, hey, this is my life story, and the flaws and the missing parts, they're the thing that make it interesting. Yeah. So I could see sitting in that room and Frankie Valli going, eh, nobody wants to watch this. But then finding it on stage, I was truly touched by the idea of boys during that time trying to find their way out of the neighborhood.
Yeah.
I think that is something that's universal. No matter where you are in time, that's always going to read true. So.
It's kind of cool. It's what I, for me, it's the cool factor of this show. This is why it's so cool.
No doubt. Yeah.
Those kind of guys producing that kind of music, you know, having that inside of them and nobody knew.
Yeah.
Right? Well,
this is a true story, too.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
It's not made up.
In the beginning of the show, he says you had three options. You know, you join the military, you get mobbed up, or you become a star, and that's what they did.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let me ask you a frank question.
A frank question?
No, it's about the movie version.
Uh-huh.
And personally, I loved the movie. I don't know why other people didn't.
I really think that it too.
Well, I mean, it wasn't universally accepted. I mean, by those whose nose might be a little bit too high.
And, yeah, I think that
maybe the name of Clint Eastwood was confusing as to being the director, because people don't associate him with musicals. Yet Clint is a very musical person, and has written music for his own movies.
Yeah.
And boy, did he you know, went to many productions of Jersey Boys.
I'm sure.
And was scouting.
I remember when he came to the Vegas production and sat
for the
in the
talent.
Fourth row and
he didn't
sat and
take it lightly.
That's why.
No, he did not.
He was very careful about the casting choices, and I thought the casting choices were amazing.
Yeah.
Renee Marino, who you must know.
I've met several times.
She's a great friend of the show and an amazing talent, no doubt.
And she's just moved back to New York. She and her husband just
She's going to own that town. That woman is the most driven woman I've ever met in my life. Like, she was talking about transcendental meditation, and I got tired just trying to say it. I mean, she does it on a regular basis. I mean, the girl, I don't think she ever sleeps. She stays up nonstop.
She's very active, and a lovely person, and super, super talented.
Yeah.
But I'm talking about John Lloyd Young earlier. A lot of people, it's interesting, the headlines for me since 2014, once a month in my club, sells out, and the women, it's almost all women.
I was there one night, I felt so alone. I was like, and I didn't bring any underwear to throw at him. It's just so tragic.
That is more information than we needed. Yeah. They know him. Not from Broadway, but from the movie.
And
they fly in from Peru and Tokyo and London and all over the country. And it's because they choose my venue because it seats a little over 100. And it's very personal, you know, to see someone like that in that environment. And they are so loyal to him, and he is such a good guy. He spends 2 hours in a meet and greet with them individually at the end of his performance.
Yeah,
that's
and he's gotten to the point where there's so many women that keep coming back that he remembers their names and their children's names, and he talks to them for a couple minutes,
even though
we try to move him through.
Right.
Yeah.
But he's really has a knack for respecting his fans and, you know, the extent of what they go to come and see him.
Well, and something he and Aaron have in common is that amazingly pure falsetto. The clips that I heard of you were, it's so
beautiful.
Strange when you hear that, because you can tell a falsetto that's forced or not a true falsetto, something that's kind of pushed through and nasal or what. You, I mean, what an amazing thing that must have. Mine sounds great in the shower. Now, I'm not sure if it would ever work on stage, but it's funny because nobody sings like that like Frankie Valli did. It was such an identifiable sound.
It's a very unique sound, and I feel lucky that I can produce that sound.
Right.
I feel like one of the lucky ones. I sang
that song. I sang that song when I was a kid. And I walked my girlfriend. I mean, I was just super little. And I walked my girlfriend to the bus stop because her name was Sherry.
Aww.
And I sang it to her. And I was the coolest kid in kindergarten. It really was.
You're still the coolest kid in the room, man.
Anyhow, so I cannot tell you really how much I loved your performance, Corey. I did not get to see you in the show on the night that I went, unfortunately, but I've certainly seen clips of you. And you're pretty amazing, and you look like Vinny Carranza. The more I say, look at you, you look like Vinny Carranza. Right? You certainly could be brothers.
Absolutely.
Right?
And his younger, handsomer brother.
Just what I was going to say. Yeah, absolutely.
There you go.
I got to ask you one more question, Aaron. As we kind of talk about the touring life and what you have to do to be in the show, what's it like to research somebody who's a living person? How much more difficult that is than somebody than who doesn't have any historical basis? Is that a challenge for an actor?
It is. When we're hired, we're not necessarily asked to do an impersonation,
right,
or a recreation, exact recreation of Frankie or Bob. They want us to capture his essence, but they also like what we personally bring to the role.
Yeah,
And that's one of the things that I think has made the show so successful. Mm-hmm. I have, through my 5.5 years, seen probably 10 or 12 different Frankies, 6 or 8 different Bobs, and the same amount of Tommies and Nicks, but it's amazing, and they're all different.
Yeah.
Everybody is completely different, but it's amazing to see how the show still works, how the story is still relevant, and how the connections and the chemistry can still be there, even though they're also different. I think it's a testament to the show, the way it was written, the way it's directed, the way it's been conceived and put together.
That's a great way of putting that.
So the U.S. National Tour, though, is your first time in this role of Frankie.
It's my first time playing the role officially. When I was in Las Vegas playing Joey, I understudied Frankie as well. And over the 3.5 years, I went on probably on average once a month.
Mm-hmm.
So
who was Frankie then?
We had two Frankies, Graham Fenton and Travis Clore.
Graham's been on this show.
Both amazing, amazing performers and singers.
And it's a show, that just keeps giving all of these opportunities to people such as yourselves.
Absolutely.
And
it's
many others. Yeah, it very much is. Yeah. And I think the producers really kind of keep it a family thing.
They
don't
do.
They?
Actually, the greatest story about all of this is the day that I'll rewind 2 or 3 days before. I went to my final. We mentioned that I've been auditioning for the show for 8 years.
Wow.
And after 8 years, there was an audition coming up again for Jersey Boys, and I thought, after 8 years, if they really don't want me, why am I going to go back? But I decided I'd go back for one last time, and I just threw it all out there.
Wow.
I auditioned, and Mary Sugarman, our casting director, said, "Aaron, you sound great. Can you come to a callback in New York in a couple of weeks?" And I said, "Yeah, as long as it isn't Thursday this day, because that's the day that my daughter is scheduled to be born."
Oh no!
And she, with sadness in her eyes, looked up at me and said, "It is that day."
And you called your wife and said, "Baby, it's C-section time."
So I called, and I was like, "I just don't know that." So I called my wife, and she was like, my wife being an actress, she said, "You have to go."
Oh, bless her heart.
So the next day we went to the doctor, and he said, "We'll move the birth date," because she was being induced for different reasons. We literally moved the birth date 2 days later. I went to New York. I auditioned. I finished. They knew, and I was like, "Look, my wife is going to have a baby. She could go into labor at any time. So if that happens, I'm getting on a plane." They let me go first in all the callbacks. The final callback, I sang. I walked out the door, walked straight into a cab that was unloading a girl, and went straight to the airport. Flew
and unloaded your girl.
And yeah, the next morning, we checked into the hospital. My wife started labor, and my wife was fully dilated, if you know what that means.
Careful, we don't want to raise our rating on the show.
My phone rang, and it was Mary Sugarman from Tara Rubin Casting. And I picked up the phone, and I said, "Look, Gail." And so I ran. She's like, go, take it." So I ran out of the delivery room and took the call, and Mary said, "Do we have a baby yet?" And I said, "Very soon." She says, "Well, it's great news then. They're going to offer you a job."
So which were you happier about?
Less than an hour later. Less than an hour later, my daughter was born.
Oh, that's amazing. She has good timing, that little girl.
Yep. Isn't that the way it is? Feast or famine, right?
Right.
I mean, 8 years of auditioning, and then all of a sudden life changes. But that's got to be hard to go, okay, honey, I'm on the road for a while now. I'll see you later. That's got to be so tough for a new
like
dad.
But like I said, my wife, we've been in the industry our entire married life, and we understand what it's like. My wife toured with Mary Poppins. I toured with Wicked. We understand what it takes to make a relationship work in this business.
And maybe one of the advantages that we have that Frankie Valli and a lot of his contemporaries didn't have is that the things like FaceTime and also that commitment to how important that family life is, because we've seen what Frankie says at the end of the show where he says, if you ain't got family, you ain't got nothing, right? And we learned that from people. He's, what, 83 now?
He'll be 83 this year.
And I mean, I think the reason he tells his story is to bring that home to young people today, hopefully to not only build stronger families, but also to say, hey, you can create great art, but you can also take care of what you need to take care of at home, which I think is a great message in this show.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are talking, of course, all things Jersey Boys at the beautiful Amundsen Theater, downtown Los Angeles, through June 24th. Very simple to get tickets. You call 213-972-4400 or go online to thecentertheatergroup.org. Or you can certainly drop by the box office downtown at the Amundsen Theater. Tickets range from as little as $25 to upwards of $100, and ticket prices are subject to change, so make sure that you ask about that. Amundsen Theater is located at the beautiful Los Angeles Music Center, 135 North Grand Avenue in downtown Los Angeles. You have every opportunity to see this, and as we say on this program, put down that remote or those video games and get yourself up into your car and go see and support live theater.
And there's shows that are important to see for a lot of reasons, and this is certainly one of those, but the best reason to see the show is because you leave feeling great.
You do.
If for no other reason, then I love the parking at the Center Theater Group. No kidding, it's my favorite parking in Los Angeles.
Yeah,
I go
easy
to the garage,
in.
I turn
easy
in, and I go down until there's a spot. It's the nicest place to park, but it is fun because there's great places to eat around there, and obviously, I don't know if you guys have taken advantage of any of these, but some great bars down there and great places to go hang out after the show as well. So, fun trip out for the evening.
Absolutely.
You hang around, Aaron, while we do some paying some bills here?
Absolutely.
We're going to talk about another great show here in L.A., so...
Oh, we are. We're going to do it. I'm starting this? Okay. Rubicon Theater, ladies and gentlemen. The Rubicon Theater Company presents the award-winning, Drama Desk-nominated, off-Broadway sensation starring Sylvia Milo in the untold story of Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart's prodigious. Prodigious? Is that right?
That's right.
You give me this complicated word.
Didn't you give me indefatigable
I
one
did.
Time?
So yes, I did.
Teach you to let me write the scripts, man.
Prodigious sister, Nannerl, with classic music composed by Mozart, and Mariana Martinez, a female composer who inspired Nannerl. And original music by Nathan Davis and Phyllis Chin.
The name Nannerl Mozart has been a footnote in classical music history, but the Drama Desk Award-winning monodrama, The Other Mozart, reveals the extraordinary talents and rich inner life of Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart's sister, whose artistry was satisfied and whose compositions were ultimately lost to the world because of society's expectations for her as a woman. Be sure not to miss the Rubicon Theater Company's production of the acclaimed off-Broadway drama the New York Times describes as strikingly beautiful.
And magnificently set in a stunning 18-foot dress and directed by Isaac Byrne, The Other Mozart is based on facts, stories, and thoughts culled from the Mozart family's humorous and heartbreaking letters. A prodigy, keyboard virtuoso, and composer, Nannerl performed alongside her brother as children throughout Europe to great acclaim, but was forced to give up her artistic passion to her youth due to the societal expectations she experienced.
Her brother would rise to become one of the preeminent composers in history, while her own works were all but lost, with the indications of her talent expressed in exchanges between her brother, her father, and her mother. The Other Mozart is a multi-sensual experience and transports the audience to a surreal world of oversized beauty and delight, but also one of the overwhelming restriction and prejudice where, finally, this other Mozart is allowed to tell her story.
And praised by the stage of London as a gem of a show and called fascinating and irresistibly intelligent by Theater Mania, this remarkable show is appearing now through June 18th at our wonderful Rubicon Theater up the coast here in California, in the city of Ventura, Wednesday through Sundays. For tickets, visit rubicontheater.org or call 805-667-2000. 2900.
That's right. No doubt about it. And obviously, we love the Rubicon, Stephanie Coltrane, and all the wonderful people
lovely
up there
people
who
there.
Do such great work. Yeah. So another great show for you to go see. And there's a lot going on in Los Angeles right now. Have you guys had a chance to get out and see any theater while you're here on tour?
Not yet. I was hoping to catch Archduke before they closed.
Yeah.
They had to mark Taper.
Definitely. No doubt about it. Yeah.
I caught Into the Woods at the Amundsen right before.
Wasn't that fantastic?
It was wonderful. Yeah. Yeah. I love that production.
My wife and I met doing that show.
Oh, awesome.
Years and years and years ago, directed by John Engstrom. And it's such a fun thing. And so I zipped down there to see it. I was just so impressed with the representational presentation of that show, given how it's so often done in this glitzy, glamorous, you know, huge wigs and all that. I thought the performances were so much more accessible in this version, which was really fun to see.
Such a neat concept.
Yeah.
Part of the great history of the Amundsen Theater and their 50 years, they bring shows in like this that we wouldn't have an opportunity to see otherwise.
That's right. No doubt about it. No doubt about it. Well, we have a very handsome young man. I do say young man sitting over here. Corey, do you mind if we ask how old you are?
I am 23 years old.
See, that's what you're supposed to lie and go, I'm 57. I just look great for my age.
I just moisturize.
Let's bring him in here.
Well, I'm talking to you after the show.
Now we are privileged to talk with another remarkably talented member of the cast of Jersey Boys, currently on stage through June 24th at the Center Theater Group's Amundsen Theater. He is making his national tour debut with this spectacular show, but he is no stranger to the stage.
Recently, he has appeared as Warner in Legally Blonde and Sky in Mamma Mia in Lincoln Center's Sinatra Centennial Concert. He was the alternate cast for 16-time Grammy Award-winning artist Sting. He received his Bachelor of Fine Arts in Musical Theater from Pace University in 2016 and is currently appearing as Bob Gaudio in Jersey Boys, and we are so happy to have him with us on the show today. Give a big welcome for Corey Giacoma. Good? I got it right.
Our audience finally woke up, as you can see, in my poor tired fingers. No, okay, I've been up since
after that live arts calendar read.
I've been up since 2 in the morning. It's so funny when I come in and look at this board. Occasionally, every once in a while, it looks completely foreign to me. I'm like, what is this computer doing here? Obviously, Corey, you have a huge role in this show. And I've got to say this. I think every performance was fantastic. Right. You stole the show with so many moments. It really was. It was so energetic and so fun.
Thank you very much.
When I left last night, I was left with one thing that we know Frankie Valli's voice. You hear one word out of a song and you know it's Frankie Valli.
Right.
It's not that way with Bob, but his songs are just a part of Frankie. That's got to be strange to be the lesser part of that, lesser apparent part of that friendship and know that you were equally as important. Have you ever met him and talked to him at all?
I have not met him. However, I've heard stories that he always jokes saying that he wasn't famous until Jersey Boys.
Isn't that interesting?
That, you know, people just, you know, saw him as one of the guys who was one of the seasons.
Yeah.
But then Jersey Boys came out and they were like, oh, wait, he's kind of responsible for majority of these songs.
People don't think Frankie would have ever made it if he hadn't had those lyrics to sing, which is fascinating when you think about that. Wow.
Now, part of, I don't know if this applies to everybody or just yourself in your role of Frankie, but your role would seem to be appropriate for this too. Isn't Frankie Camp conducted by Bob Gaudio?
It is, yeah.
Frankie Camp being what you have to go through when you're rehearsing do the role.
Yes. Those of us who are not musical theater people, you got to explain this a little bit more here. There's a camp for Frankie's?
Yeah.
I have 900 jokes that I'm not making right now, just so everybody knows. Okay? Are we all good?
There are actually two different Frankie camps, what we call. The first one is part of the audition process, where they take 8 or 10 guys that are right for the role, and they put them through 3 strenuous days of acting, singing, and dancing, right? That's part of the audition process, right?
Oh, okay.
And then from then on out, you know, that they'll decide if they want to keep, you know, considering you for the show, which I did years back.
You did this before you got the role?
Yes, I did.
Wow, fantastic.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, Corey?
The other Frankie camp that you're referring to is every Frankie gets to spend 2 days in studio with Bob and singing through the entire score.
Actual
and,
Bob, not me.
Yeah.
Right. Although that may be next on your role. You never know.
Who knows?
We get to sing through the entire score and get notes from Bob, and, you know, inevitably you get stories, and it's just an amazing experience. I really hope that Corey can get a chance to meet Bob. He's fantastic.
That sounds
great.
Well, you know, you have so many great scenes in the show, and it really brings it down to a very real level, the relationship that you have with Frankie's character
as well. Yeah, I mean, the book writing for the show is really remarkable. And you don't find that very often with a jukebox musical. And that's what makes this so special, is that it's really, you know, a book-driven show with just great tunes thrown on top of it.
Yeah.
And the scene work between Bob and Frankie is so intimate and so real and, yeah. and you know, grounded in so much realism that it's inevitable for the audience to see that relationship and see what made these two so special and what made the handshake that defeated the test of time.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever, in your wildest dreams, think you'd be in Jersey Boys?
Oh, my God. It was a dream. I mean, Bob Gaudio and Jersey Boys were, it was a dream show, a dream role of yeah. mine. And my mom always, you know, quells as she, as a good Jewish boy. No. She always, you know, is so emotional when she talks about it, because just a year before I booked it, she came to New York and I took her to see Jersey Boys because it was one of my favorite shows.
Yeah.
And I could get cheap student rush tickets for it. And so I took mom to see it, and Bob Gaudio enters about 20 minutes into the show, as you guys saw.
He really does. He's got a long entrance.
Well, I've got a nice break.
You get the dressing room to yourself for a little bit there.
We're all scrambling to get to stage, and he's still in his robe.
Yep. I shower when everyone else gets places.
Good to know if anybody wants to play any pranks on him, this is the time, ladies and gentlemen.
Just take my towel out
That's
of the
right.
bathroom.
We can set up embarrassing moments for the end of the
there
show.
There we go. So. But, you know, I took my mom to see it, and Bob enters halfway through the first act, and I leaned over to my mom, and I was like, that's my dream role, Mom.
Really?
And she, now whenever she sees the show and people are like, oh, that's your son, she's like, oh my God, he said this was his dream role a year ago.
It's weird that your mom is Mike Myers. That's very strange. But it's awesome.
See, I think a little bit more Edna Turnblad. A little bit, you know?
Yeah. I would say that being a good young Jewish boy who is 6'9", about, probably Frankie Valli was out of the running for you. Is that right?
I would think so. It's funny. During my final callback, I walked in the room and he goes, I assume you're here for Bob. And I go, no, Frankie.
Frankie Valli. That's a great joke. A great joke. It was interesting to watch last night because this show has a spoken narrative that no other musical has. It goes through the four seasons, with each of the seasons doing one season as they talk about it. Yeah. So I believe yours is the middle one. Is that correct?
Yes, you do, I am Summer.
Summer. So, which yeah. I think fits very well, because once he entered the group, there was a rebirth, there was a thriving. And then at the end, Bob didn't step away, but he definitely tried to take a bit of a back seat, and it yeah. became Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons.
Right.
Is that correct? So it was interesting, because growing up, I'd always heard of Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons, and I never got the connection until I'd seen the film years ago that he was one of the Four Seasons and the way that worked. I thought it was interesting to see how separate Bob was, almost yeah. the everyman character. You definitely had Frankie, who was a superstar, and then the other two are very, they're very identifiable as character archetypes.
Yeah.
So you look at that and you go, that's what's going to happen with that character, and that's what's going to happen with him, yeah. because they were kids from Jersey, right? You know that they're not going to have as wide an arc as Frankie does. But Bob was the Jimmy Stewart type of everyman character who yeah. went through every emotion. He'd already had a one-hit wonder kind of career,
yeah.
correct?
With, absolutely.
They wear short shorts, is that
with,
right?
With short shorts, yeah.
Varying, obviously, the height of lyrical writing in American culture. But then it came back with these amazing love lyrics that seemed to come from a different space. I only ask one tough question yeah. per show. I'm only allowed one. I went to radio
right,
school. They said only one tough question.
That's it. Yeah.
What do you think the change in Bob was, where he went from this pop silliness to this deep and emotional place? And more importantly, was it the meeting of Frankie Valli?
Yeah, I think he found his muse. You know, yeah. The moment when Bob enters in the show, you know, he sits at the bar and he hears Frankie singing Moody's Mood, and it literally turns him around. You know, he gets
right.
there at first and he's, you know, not to give too much away, but he says, come on, this is for my grandparents.
Yeah.
And he's like, and Joe Pesci, who's a part of the show, he's like, come on, trust it. And then all of a sudden, Frankie hits a note, and Bob's like, that. And he had toured with some incredible artists, you know, Chuck Berry and Sam Cooke and all these
right.
guys. And then all of a sudden, he was like, but none of that, you know, turned my head the way that this guy does. And then suddenly, he was like, this is what I needed. This is, you know, and I think, and I can't speak for Bob, but I'm sure there was some sort of, you know, every artist has a sort of writer's block or mm-hmm. a block of some sort, and you know, maybe he was going through something at the time, and then something sparked him and it hit, and all of a sudden, you know, it just came out like wine.
Yeah, that's, and also, you know, my favorite John Osborne quote is, writers don't need love, all they require is money. It probably helped that all of a sudden, hey, we're going to make some cash doing this.
Right?
I think that's a great thing,
too. Yeah, he was 22 and didn't know what to do with himself.
That's right.
I want to ask another Frank question. Aaron, of course.
I'm so slow. I gotta get myself faster fingers.
Jumps,
I didn't mean it like that. But there is another gentleman who is playing this role at other performances, and of course that is Mark Ballas from Dancing with the Stars.
And boy, and did he have Mark, some fans there last night.
Yeah, I'm sure he has them every night.
That's true.
But he certainly had the pleasure of closing the show out on Broadway and going into this. And I think that most people are so taken aback by the fact that he's in a musical where he has had musical theater experience, certainly. I did attend the opening night of The Run and saw his performance. And so this is directed to you, Corey. Yep. What is it like to, you've got Aaron here, who you have developed a relationship with.
Oh, yeah.
Off stage and on stage, and now you're playing with somebody like Mark Ballas, whose interpretation is different.
Yeah.
What was the adjustment like?
Well, you know, I look at it as a gift. You know, I get to do a different show three different times a week. Well, actually four, because Aaron does two. You know, our other Frankie does one show, Miguel, and then we've got Mark. And so I get three different interpretations of Frankie Valli, and I get three different deliveries of a line.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so much fun because as an actor, that's part of our job, is to just take something and bounce it back.
So you're not necessarily giving the same delivery of your dialogue that you would with Aaron. You're going,
oh no, you know, it's got to be different. It's got to be organic, because you know, it's fresh for every single audience. And so, you know, Mark's going to deliver a line differently than Aaron does, and Aaron's going to deliver it differently than Miguel does, and you know, all, you know, the circle continues.
Yeah.
But it's so much fun because we're just playing. We're up there just bouncing energy off of each other, and you know, they're all a pleasure to work with. Aaron, Miguel, and Mark, they all bust their tails, and they come and deliver every single night.
So that's not an unusual situation. I mean, it might be with Mark Ballas coming into the show, but I mean, other Frankies during the course of the tour.
Yeah, early on they realized that having a Frankie Valli sing eight shows a week was just too much.
I can imagine, right?
Yeah. It's just too much. Yeah. So they quickly went to a 6-2 show split. So one Frankie does six shows a week, so one show a day, and then on the two show days they have an alternate that does those two shows.
And is he never in the show in another role?
No.
Wow.
Nope. Fantastic. On top of that, we also have understudies, you know, like we would in any company, to an understudy that's in the show. The Joe Pesci role is always a Frankie understudy.
Oh, very important.
And then one of the swings that's off stage but always at the show is also a Frankie.
Tough cover. Jobs.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
No
but God bless them all, because they always come through when it's least expected,
right?
Absolutely.
Well, what I thought was so interesting last night, and of course a number of interesting aspects to this show, but as I sat and watched it, I was struck by the fact that this musical is different from any other show, in that as you watch it, you're kind of growing with Frankie. Now, Mark, I didn't know what to expect. I knew the guy could move, and boy, this just in, he can dance a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, it was really impressive. I tried that microphone thing he does when I got home and broke my daughter's leg. It was terrible, but it was worth a try. So it was strange to watch last night, because you do see that these are normal guys who happen to have this amazing talent that they developed over time. But your entire secondary cast, the people who weren't playing the major roles, David Lamar, of course, who's very funny, and my good buddy Corey Greenan, who I've seen in a number of shows, and it's always fantastic. What a great cast it must be to work with, because this ensemble show moves so quick. I remember David sliding in on that office chair. And, man, that's what I would have choreographed. I just loved it. I thought that was so great.
It's hysterical.
So, yeah, a lot of fun stuff.
I mean, the show would not operate half as smoothly without that ensemble. I mean, it's a machine.
Yeah.
It really is. And it could not operate without every single piece of the puzzle. And the show, you know, there's so much energy that is needed in a show like this. And I think it, you know, reflects what you were saying about the movie. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what a lot of people felt was missing from the movie, was just the natural energy that comes from the theater. You know, because, you know, you have the same dialogue, you have the same songs. It's just, you know, there's something about the palpable energy in a theater. And so the energy that our cast brings, and specifically our cast, we are very fortunate to have every single person that we've got on that stage.
No doubt.
Well, you know, we said about Mark having fans there, and you said, Andrew, that they were there last night. Mm-hmm. The show, to me,
it's very true.
It has fans.
Tons of fans.
Yeah, I mean, that's why people go. I mean, this is a show that you want to see again and again.
And again. we have an amazing super fan base, was what we like to call it. People that have seen the show over 50, 100, 150 times.
Do they get anything for that from the producers?
They should. Better seats. They should. Yeah, right? They get to keep the show going. That's what they get. They get another year
another
out of the
chance
tour.
To see it. That's right.
Well, but it's amazing to meet some of these people, and we get to I've actually become friends with some of them, too, and it's really great. It's, you know, the show is a personal show.
Yes,
and
very
it touches
personal.
On a very touches people on a very personal and specific level.
No, speaking of personal, Andrew, it's come to that time, hasn't it?
That time of the show.
That time.
Do you see them getting nervous?
Very personal. Yeah.
And now, embarrassing moments.
No kidding, our entire technical budget was right there.
That's right.
Done for the
well
year.
Spent.
There
money
we go.
Well
but we
spent.
Should say, we should say that is David Letterman's...
That's right. That's Ed Hall, a good buddy who plays Scrooge. I play Bob Cratchit in A Christmas Carol at the Civic Arts.
Great voiceover artist and announcer.
Ed's a friend. And not only that, but he's a friend of the show, been on the show a time or two. So now, this is a section, and I know we've been very tricky with naming it Embarrassing Moments, but it's a point where we ask for your, wait for it, embarrassing moments. So that's how we got the name. Does anybody have one that springs to mind? What we're looking for is something that maybe terrified you so much that you almost quit the business and walked away but didn't.
Oh, man.
So we know that our young performers out there know that if something happens in live performance, you can continue on and still reach the heights that you deserve.
Well, I mean, there's always embarrassing moments.
I had one that this last weekend that happened. It wasn't that dramatic. I'll share this one with you that was kind of funny, and then I'll share one with you that's not as funny but very dramatic.
Love it.
The first one was we were doing Dawn, which you played earlier. The Dawn number is in three different sections. It starts on the Ed Sullivan Show, and so we're playing to a camera, and you see the live feed of our video projection up on the Jumbotron. We then transition to a concert facing the audience performance of Dawn in the second verse. And then we transition and go to the third verse, and without ruining the effect, the audience gets the feel of what it's like to be backstage and see us from behind. So it's a lot of moving and getting microphones and all these sorts of things. So transitioning it from Dawn 1 to Dawn 2, I have a microphone in my hand, and I'm taking it as part of the choreography and everything. I move, and I put it in a mic stand for the second section of Dawn, which is out to the audience.
Yeah.
As I go to put the mic in, it's got a kind of a really tight plastic spring-loaded almost a little cup that the mic sits in. I didn't quite push it in all the way, and it popped.
Oh, no.
And it jumped up and literally flipped in
Tell
the
me
air
you caught it.
In front of my face.
Oh, man.
And I did. I caught it with my
hand. Oh, that's awesome.
With the mic facing my mouth and put it back in. But I had a friend at the show that night, and she was like, that was amazing.
Right,
the
what
mic
a great
flipped
move.
Up and you caught it.
Yeah, what a cool move.
Right? Well, thank goodness for performance energy.
Right, exactly.
Could you do it again? Do you think you could do it?
Probably not. Probably, I don't know if I could plan that. The second thing happened, I think this is before you joined the tour. I was at the end of the show. I was doing the final monologue, kind of telling the end of Frankie's story. And I hear from the audience some kind of hubbub and something's happening. And, you know, I did the show in Vegas for 3.5 years, and we had, you know, drunken, disorderly people escorted out of the show on a weekly basis.
Wow.
Yeah, it was crazy. It was, I mean, it was fun.
One of them was Tommy.
Right.
Which wasn't any
exactly.
good. So, yeah, that's a big problem.
But I'm wrapping up the show, and I hear some kind of hubbub, and so I was like, something's going on, but I'm going to push through. And I continue to talk, and then I heard someone scream, call 911.
Oh, no.
And so I stopped, and I kind of looked out there. And, you know, someone cried out, is there a doctor in the house? There's a doctor in the house.
Right.
Well, evidently, an older gentleman had fainted, and they were worried that he had had a heart attack.
Oh, no.
He turned out to be just fine. He had just passed out, and they couldn't quite get him to come to, but the ambulance came and everything. It was a sobering moment to realize that, you know, the last moments of this man's life could have
right.
been, you know,
terrifying.
Enjoyed in this show.
Yeah. But now he did turn out to be okay.
He did turn out to be okay.
It's pretty impressive that, you know, I mean, a lot of Frankies can probably make the 14-year-old girls pass out, but when you're making old dudes pass out.
Right?
Well done,
my
friend.
That's how you know
he's good. That's new. It's now a special skill on my resume.
Corey, what do you got for us, buddy?
Oh, I've got two as well. One happened a few weeks ago during our finale of the show. We're doing Who Loves You, high energy, the crowd's getting on their feet, the whole company comes out, each season comes out one by one, and it's very, like, you know, it's heroic and fun. And we do this part, and we've got our mic stands in front of us, and we do this part where we go, I can't even remember the lyrics right now, but we do a dance move where we do a turn, and then we grab the mic, and we bend down, and we point at an audience, and then we spring back up. And so I did the turn, and I go to grab my mic, and instead of grabbing it, I backhand it.
Oh, no.
Mic goes flying into the audience. Oh, mic stand falls down.
Oh, my goodness.
And
oh,
as you mentioned earlier, I'm 6'9".
Right.
And so 6'2", or 6'3", Corey gets on his hands and knees in the middle of a number while everyone else is dancing, picking up my mic. And then my mic flew into the audience, so I don't have a mic now.
Right.
So I'm just, like, singing into a mic stand.
And you've got some 45-year-old guy trying to sing along in the second row of the audience.
Holding his eye.
Into his face. And then we finish our bows, and I look at the stage, and I realize they had passed the mic up through the audience and placed it on the edge of the stage. And the Four Seasons exit all together, like, hugging each other. And so the three of them run off, and I grab my mic and, like, wave to the audience. So that was
fantastic.
One. And then last year, I did a production of Shrek where I played Lord Farquaad, and as six three, I had to do it on my knees, where they put little, you know, fake little legs, because Lord Farquaad is supposed to be very small, and these legs weren't cooperating,
oh, no.
And nor was the wig, and so during one scene, one of the knee pads broke, and so I had one of these fake legs just dangling, and instead of just, you know, going with it, I tried to justify it, and mind you, it was for a kid's matinee, so it was like a 10 no. o'clock matinee where it was all children, and I don't know what I was thinking, but I thought it would be a good idea, since his leg was just dangling, he broke his leg. So I start like shrieking like my leg is broken to children, and the kids are getting scared because I'm like, oh, my leg. I don't know why I thought that was a good idea. And then I finally took my bow at the end of the show, and my wig comes flying off when
no.
I go. So just broke the illusion for these kids.
In about 18 years, you're going to have kids come to you with psychology bills going, I saw this production, and I was wounded ever since.
Wow.
Well, I got to tell you, like I said last night, it was a great, great show and lots of fun. Jersey Boys is about the music. There's no doubt about it, but the heart of the show is the characters. Yeah. And at the end of the show, they each say what they're saying when they leave, and obviously, Corey, you have a moment where you say goodbye and kind of what happened to Bob. And when you left, the ovation was so heartfelt for what you'd given that character, and you really poured yourself into his skin, which I thought was really remarkable.
Thank you very much.
Congrats and great job. But
Thank
I want to tell a quick story that may tell people just how much Jersey Boys was enjoyed by the fans sitting next to me. During your moment where, and again, no giveaways here, you have a moment where you have an amorous moment with a young lady.
Oh,
that's
I
as
sure
delicately
do.
As I can put it. No kidding. That's the nicest I've ever talked in my entire life.
It's a fun moment.
And you come out and you do a little strut. And the woman next to me was probably 70, 80 years old. She laughed through the entire next scene. I don't think I have any idea what happened for the next scene because she was cackling at you so much. So
well, good.
Somewhere out there, if things don't work out on other fronts, you've got some other options, brother. I'm telling you. Obviously, we want to thank our audiences
Absolutely.
For listening.
Absolutely. And ladies and gentlemen, one more time, please take note of this situation and this information. Jersey Boys at the Amundsen Theater, downtown Los Angeles, Center Theater Group, box office is prepared to give you a ticket for a certain dollar amount, and you can certainly afford it because it is priced beautifully.
Truly great prices there.
And you can also call the box office at 213 area code 972-4400 or go online at centertheatergroup.org to make your purchase. But the main point is, don't miss a performance of this show. You have from now until June 24th to do so, and then it goes on its way on tour throughout the rest of the country. And for those of you who listen to this show in other parts of the country, just go to the Jersey Boys US Tour website And they will have all of that information for you as to where it's playing. But while you're here in Los Angeles, you know where to go.
Obviously, and a great production. And we obviously want to let you know about the Rubicon again, to go out and see the other Mozart. So many great events.
Yes.
Log on to performingartslive.com. Check them out, and you're going to find lots of great things there, too. A big thank you to our guests today, Corey and Aaron. Thank you so much.
Guys, what a pleasure.
Pleasure's ours.
Thank you. You guys break legs on the rest of the show, okay? It's going to be a great run.
Andrew, always a pleasure to be sitting across from you.
Michael, where do I get to see you next week?
On the radio.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Andrew David James, only on LA Talk Radio.